Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 55 of NBA Unwrapped. I'm Corbin Weinerman, joined by a special guest today for our free agency edition of NBA Unwrapped, Brady Klopfer, a writer for the Golden State Warriors at SB Nation, friend of the show. Brady, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Corbin. How about yourself?
Doing pretty well. Just trying to get through the Kawhi Leonard stop to free agency. It was really fast-paced to begin with, but now just seems like we're all waiting on Kawhi, so hopefully that comes pretty soon. I hope it comes soon, but I hope I have time to publish this podcast before it's out, because then, yeah. So, knowing my luck, it'll come after we finish this podcast, but before we can publish it.
Yeah, it always seems to break that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, let's try to get through this anyways. So, a lot of stuff to talk about, obviously. We're going to talk about Kevin Durant's move to the Brooklyn Nets with Kyrie Irving, D'Angelo Russell coming back, how that affects the Warriors, a lot of other moves in free agency. But before we get to that, I want to remind you guys to follow the show on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped, Brady on Twitter at Brady Klopfer NBA. That's at BradyKlopferNBA. Also, make sure to follow our Unwrapped Sports Network page at Unwrapped Sports. Go ahead and check out our website at unwrappedsports.com. We have a lot of great content on there, a lot of articles. We also have all of our partner podcasts on there as well. When you're listening to our podcast, you can listen to it on the Apple iTunes podcast app. Also, listen to us on Anchor, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, Radio Public. Basically, anywhere you can find podcasts, we're there. So go ahead and listen to us however you prefer. If you are listening to us on the Apple iTunes podcast app, please go ahead and give us a 5-star review. It really helps us out just continue to gain some recognition so we can keep generating good content for you guys. So we appreciate all the support you guys give us. All right, Brady, let's just get right into it. NBA free agency started a little early this year, June 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, instead of midnight Eastern like it usually is. Before we get to the moves, just what did you think overall of the NBA moving it up 6 hours? Did you think it was the right decision?
I do think it's the right decision. I mean, just having things break during the afternoon and evening rather than in the middle of the night is a huge difference, because Even if you're not going to have the huge news breaking, which in this case it did, you still have all of the kind of predetermined news, like Klay Thompson re-signing, or even things like Kemba Walker going to Boston, which had kind of already been figured out a few days in advance. But those things, you kind of get the confirmation for them right when the free agency begins. And having that be at 6 o'clock or 3 o'clock, depending on where you live, is a lot more convenient than at midnight or at 9 p.m. And I got to imagine for the Adrian Wojnarowskis and the Shams Charanias of the world, it's a welcome change as well.
I'm sure it is. Wojnarowski, he did his Woj pod. He was recording it at 3 a.m. still. So I don't know how much that really helped him. He got a lot of the news out of the way on that first day instead of having to go through it probably the next 2 or 3 days. I think it was definitely the right decision. I'm going to be curious if they continue this moving forward. It worked out well for the NBA that it was on the weekend. If it's during the week and you're putting it at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, well, West Coast, everyone's still at work, so I don't know if that's the best thing. I mean, the NBA is going to get notoriety regardless. It's just me who works would appreciate it not going off in the middle of my work day, but we'll see. Overall, I mean, you got a lot of the stuff out of the way on the first day. The Kemba Walker signing with the Celtics, I mean, we knew about that, like a day ahead of time? So,
yeah,
I don't want to hear any more accusations with the Lakers or anyone else about tampering, because tampering happens. It happens all the time in the NBA, and I'm not upset about it either. I'm a Lakers fan, so obviously I'm not a Celtics fan. But at the same time, I'm not upset that they had a deal set with Kemba Walker before free agency started. I'm going to be upset because they gave him the deal they were going to and they just agreed to it one day early. No. But it was really exciting day for sure. Let's get into the biggest move that's happened so far pre-Kawhi Leonard, and that's Kevin Durant agreeing to go to the Brooklyn Nets. So Brady, I want to hear from you first. Just what are your overall thoughts on Durant going there and then also teaming up with Kyrie Irving and the Warriors getting D'Angelo Russell in return?
Yeah, the return of D'Angelo Russell is, in my opinion, the most surprising move definitely. So far. That's just one that I don't think anyone saw coming. Even knowing the Warriors' mentality of wanting to always try to swing for the fences, I didn't think anything like that was particularly possible. As for Durant himself, I'm not surprised at all. There had been so much smoke about him leaving, so much smoke about him joining Kyrie Irving. And there's not always fire where there's smoke. Obviously, you have the misfortune of knowing that as it pertains to Paul George not actually coming to the Lakers after everyone kind of predetermined it. But for the most part, when there's that smoke, there tends to be fire. And in my opinion, I know a lot of Warriors fans felt differently, but in my opinion, there were just so many discussions all year long about Durant leaving, about Durant wanting to play with Kyrie Irving, that to me, that felt like far and away the most likely situation. Of course, New York kind of seemed to be the leader in those sweepstakes for a while, but like with Kemba, Kyrie to Brooklyn was one of those things that seemed to be pretty much guaranteed a day or two before free agency actually began. So by the time it actually rolled around, I certainly felt like Brooklyn was the most likely option to land Durant. And I think it's a great move for Brooklyn, obviously. They really didn't have to do anything to clear up that space other than let D'Angelo Russell go, but you're directly replacing him with Kyrie Irving, who, say what you want about Kyrie Irving's leadership style, he's a better basketball player.
Yeah.
So you're getting better this year, even with Durant sidelined, because you're basically the same team, but upgrading massively at point guard. And then you get Kevin Durant, who, hey, he's pretty darn good. So I think that's going to be a fun team. I mean, you take two star players like that and you put them in a foundation with players like Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris and Jared Allen.
That's going to be
a fun team.
And they got DeAndre Jordan, too.
They got DeAndre Jordan. They got Garrett Temple. They got Wilson Chandler.
I thought Wilson Chandler was still a free agent. Did he sign with the Nets?
Yeah, he signed. He signed with them like an hour ago.
Oh, wow. I must have missed that. That's another good pickup. He was someone that did he sign for the vet minimum?
He signed, I think, for 2.5.
Okay,
so
yeah.
A little bit more.
I think, depending on how many years he's been in the league, that might have been the vet minimum.
Oh, yeah, he has been in the league for quite a while.
Yeah.
So that might be the minimum.
Yeah, I think that was the minimum. That's another great signing for them. The Nets.
Yeah.
Let's focus, I guess, on the Nets just first, since that's where we are, and then we'll go back to the Warriors. The Nets next year, I mean, I don't think they're going to get out of the East just because I hope Durant doesn't come back next year, and that's not because I'm wishing anything bad on him. That's just for his best interest, being able to come back from that Achilles rupture. You just look at the timeline. He ruptured it in the finals, so usually an Achilles rupture, you come back in 9 to 12 months. So if he comes back in 9 months, he's essentially coming back right when the playoffs are starting, and for someone who missed the entire year, didn't get to really do any on-court, didn't get to do any on-court work or won't get to do any on-court work this offseason, that's just a really tough ask for someone who, when he comes back, whether he's capable of it or not, everyone is going to be expecting that he is going to be leading the Brooklyn Nets right away when he's back, and that's just not realistic, at least in my opinion. Anyone that comes back from a ruptured Achilles, I've said it time and time again on this podcast, an Achilles rupture is the worst injury that you can have in sports. And Kevin Durant, I just think, regardless of how good the Nets are next year without him, which I think that they'll be definitely a playoff team, but they're not going to make it out of the East next year without him. I hope he doesn't try to rush his way back, similar to how he did this year. Hopefully he's learned from that, but we'll see. Where do you think that the Nets are next year when the playoffs roll around? Do you think that they're actually able to contend in the East, or that they're just a playoff team?
Yeah, I don't think they can contend. Obviously, we're going to have to wait and see what happens with Kawhi Leonard to see where Toronto fits. But I don't see Brooklyn without Kevin Durant being in that same tier as Philadelphia or Milwaukee. There's just too much talent on those teams. I am a little bit lower on Kyrie Irving than some people. He's obviously a star, but I don't think that he deserves to be mentioned in that same tier as a Kawhi Leonard or a Giannis Antetokounmpo. I don't even think he is in quite the same tier as a Joel Embiid. So I think, you know, they don't have the top end talent that they're going to have when Durant is back. I think they can do better than they did last year when they finished sixth, in part because the teams in front of them are going to be a little bit compromised. Obviously, you know, I think Indy might have some struggles this year, losing Thaddeus Young and Bogdanovich and
Darren Oladipo Collison.
Probably won't. Yeah. And Collison and Oladipo probably won't be ready for a little while. Boston obviously is getting worse, losing Horford and making a slight downgrade at the point guard position. Right. And Toronto might get a lot worse, obviously. So I think there's a really good chance that they get home court advantage and, you know, have a run to the second round or so. But I don't see them being able to compete for the East. And I agree with you that they should hold Durant out. If Durant had re-signed with the Warriors, I would be open to him coming back in the playoffs, because then you're coming back into a system that you're familiar with, that you're used to, with players you're used to playing with. But trying to figure out those things on the fly in the playoffs while you're rehabbing, like you said, the worst injury to come back from, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
It's a year where you can do a little bit better, enjoy it, reap the rewards, get Durant completely healthy, and come back firing in 2020.
Right, yeah, I completely agree. And on the Kevin Durant stuff, so you mentioned a little earlier how, I mean, I was hearing it too the whole year, how he was gone. This was his last year with the Warriors, and for a while it looked like it was going to be the Knicks, ended up being the Nets. But what changed this year in Golden State? Was it just Durant wore out his welcome there, or why was it such a foregone conclusion so early in the year that, yeah, Kevin Durant's gone after this year no matter what, when they had been so successful with him?
Yeah, I think that's something that we may not ever fully know the answer to. I do know that it was weird from the onset. You know, obviously everyone remembers that spat between he and Draymond Green, which oddly kind of brought the team a little bit closer because they had to overcome that. But there were weird things throughout the year. His mother, of course, the famous Wanda Durant from his famous MVP speech. She was a staple at Thunder games. She was a staple at Warriors games for the first 2 years. She stopped coming to games this year. Huh. So there were all sorts of kind of little things left and right. So I'm sure there are a lot of pieces that will either be revealed over time or maybe we'll never know. But the most important report that I've seen about it came from Marcus Thompson II, who is the beat reporter for the Warriors one of the beat reporters for the Warriors at The Athletic. He basically said that the chemistry, the comfort, the relationships never quite played out the way that he had envisioned them being, that he had hoped that he and Steph Curry would become this amazing duo that was seen by everyone who covers the league and watches the league as an unstoppable force, and that they would be, you know, very close friends both on and off the court. And of course they have incredibly different lifestyles, with Curry having a wife and three kids and Durant being a bachelor and obviously having different interests, and apparently them just getting along really well but not being great friends was part of it. And then the fact that the Warriors fan base and media were kind of constantly pitting them against each other, which was kind of inevitable because he joined a 73-win team. Like, you're joining one of the greatest teams ever. Anytime that you then struggle, it's going to be natural for fans to point to you as being the weak link because you are the new guy and things changed when you came. So it really was in the Warriors market, from the media, from the fans, on Twitter and everywhere else, there was always kind of this element of protecting Steph Curry, who was their homegrown superstar, who brought them out of the dark ages. And every time the team struggled, it was, oh, well, they didn't struggle before Durant came. Every time Curry got hurt and they lost, it was, well, they were better when Curry's playing, not when Durant is playing. And as much as those two played well together, there was never that synergy from the fan base or from the off-court friendship. And at least according to Marcus Thompson's report, that was kind of it. That it wasn't any big thing that made it break down so much as it just never was the ideal situation that I think he had envisioned.
Right.
Zach Lowe mentioned today in his post that he talked to Steve Kerr and said, I mean, not Steve Kerr, excuse me, Steve Nash, who is a consultant on the Warriors. And that Nash said that he had never seen Durant more low than in the summer after winning the first championship, because he had anticipated that winning the championship would bring this new light and happiness to him. And everything was still the same for him. So I think he went to the Warriors with this, you know, kind of utopian idea of what it was going to be like, how he was going to be viewed, how he was going to feel, how the relationships were going to be, and it didn't quite work out that way.
Huh. Yeah. That's it's amazing to me how the Warriors were so good with Kevin Durant, though, and they had it all right in front of them, and then just the little bit of mismanagement with how they handled Kevin Durant's injury too in the playoffs, I'm sure obviously didn't help with whether he rushed himself back or felt pressure from the team or his teammates. Andre Iguodala had an interview, I think, a week after the finals, where he talked about how the Warriors had misdiagnosed his injury the season before in the conference finals and finals, and how he was getting pressure from his teammates to come back too early. It's interesting how I think you're right that we're never going to fully know everything that went on behind the scenes, but as we start to be a little bit more farther and farther removed from everything, we will start to dig up a little bit more bits and pieces and start to piece everything together. Really quickly before we get to D'Angelo Russell and the Warriors, the Knicks reportedly not or having questions and concerns over Durant's injury and not wanting to give him a full max. Is there any, do you agree with that in any way, or should they have just regardless given him the full max?
You got to give him the full max. There's just, it's one thing if, I mean, I think any team should have offered him the full max if they had the cap space to do so. But if you're going to not do it, you have to be a team that can afford to not do it. And the Knicks are not that team. The Knicks have been so bad for so long. They have been so devoid of star talent for so long. And now look what happened to them. They ended up with Julius Randle as their headliner. They're giving $15.5 million a year to Bobby Portis. Yeah. They signed Elfrid Payton. I mean, you could give Durant $100 million if you were legally allowed to, and that would be better than what they ended up with. So, no, especially for that organization that is in dire need of something star related, there's no excuse for that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I have my own concerns about. I don't think when Kevin Durant comes back, even next year or the year after that, because you're supposed to give someone 2 full years before they're fully back from a ruptured Achilles, I just don't think he's ever going to be close to as dominant as he was before. With that said, though, if you're the Knicks, you're completely right. If you have any chance to go get a superstar, just a marquee name to give your fan base some hope, you do it because we saw what the alternative was. And I'll say this, that the only team that I think that you could really make an argument should not have given Kevin Durant the max would actually be the Lakers, just because their timeline with everything. They have LeBron James, who's going to be 35 years old in December. they're completely in win now mode, and they cannot. If they gave Kevin Durant a max, they would essentially be writing off this season as well, because in all likelihood he won't be back. It wouldn't make sense, because you'd have two stars, then you'd have to fill out the roster around them with minimum players. But anyways, let's go back to the Warriors. D'Angelo Russell coming back in the sign and trade. Did you ever see that as a possibility before it happened? And what do you think D'Angelo Russell's impact is going to be on the Warriors?
I had not even had it cross my mind.
No,
because
me
it
neither.
Feels so far-fetched.
Yeah.
It's just a stunning move, especially when you consider the ramifications of it, because it hard caps them. It put them in a position where they had to let Jordan Bell go, almost had to let Kevon Looney go, had to trade Andre Iguodala just to make the space for it. They lost two first-round picks, one to Brooklyn and one to Memphis, in trading Iguodala.
And that Iguodala trade, too, because that's the draft pick is in 2024, right? And it's pretty lightly protected. So I know that's out in the distant future, but that could come back to bite them just because of a salary dump.
Yeah, and you know, 2024, they're certainly hoping to still be good by then, but, you know, realistically, 2024 is going to be, what, Curry's age 36 season, I think?
Yeah.
You're probably, barring a big move, you know, they're not on pace to be a particularly good team then. Obviously, it's a long way away, but we've seen those types of moves come back to bite teams in the past.
Yeah, I being a Laker fan, I know quite a bit of that.
Yes. Absolutely. So I'm excited about the move because I'm incredibly curious about it. I am incredibly curious to see what ultimately transpires. Russell is an interesting fit with the Warriors. I don't think he's a bad fit, but he is, you know, an interesting fit. Obviously, he's a combo guard where the Warriors already have an all-star point guard and an all-star shooting guard. And now you're kind of throwing a third guard into the mix. He is a pick-and-roll heavy player, which has been something that the Warriors have kind of been hesitant to go to in the past few years, much to the ire of the fan base. I saw a funny tweet from someone today because the Warriors also signed Willie Cauley-Stein, who is a pretty solid role man. Yeah, very good signing for essentially the minimum. And he's a very strong role man. D'Angelo Russell is a very strong pick-and-roll ball handler. So I saw a funny tweet about how Steve Kerr couldn't get the Warriors to run a pick-and-roll when it was Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, but now he's going to start running it with D'Angelo Russell and Willie Cauley-Stein. But I'm curious about it, not just because of that fit, but because Russell's sitting on $30 million a year. He's a 23-year-old All-Star. He is a very, very interesting trade package. And, you know, to hear most of the reports, that is half of the reason why the Warriors got him in the first place. They weren't particularly enamored with him. They just didn't want to risk losing Kevin Durant without getting something in return.
Right.
So they got something in return, and one report I believe even said that the Warriors pushed to have it be virtually a max contract rather than trying to see if they could get him at a lower price point, because that makes it match if they swing a bigger trade somewhere down the road. So if a guy like Joel Embiid gets pissed off at Brett Brown or Ben Simmons and wants his way out, well, now you have matching contracts that you can potentially make a trade for. So obviously that's an extreme example. But I don't think the Warriors got D'Angelo Russell anticipating that he is going to live out the 4 years on his contract. I think they got him to keep the team playing well while Klay Thompson is injured. And I think he'll be a good fit while Klay is out. And after that happens, after Klay comes back, then it becomes a matter of let's start looking around and see who needs a young all-star point guard, because maybe we can find someone who fits our team a little bit better than he does.
Yeah, I get the reasoning behind it. I I wish that D'Angelo Russell just would have gone somewhere else, just because I just think it hurts him, his growth as a player, with these reports already coming out that, yeah, the Warriors are going to be looking to trade you. You just signed a max contract with them, but they know that in 6-7 months, when Klay Thompson's back on the court, you're probably not going to make it past the trade deadline. D'Angelo Russell, it's going to be fun to see how the Warriors can incorporate him and Stephen Curry in the backcourt, because defensively that is going to get pretty ugly. Offensively, though, they're going to look really good. D'Angelo Russell, before his freshman year at Ohio State, he was an off-ball guard in high school. He played with Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons was the point guard. D'Angelo Russell was the two guard. He can absolutely fit in as the two guard for the Warriors. And if you don't trade D'Angelo Russell and Klay Thompson comes back, Klay Thompson can fit in pretty seamlessly at the three. And then I know D'Angelo Russell isn't as great of a shooter as Kevin Durant is, but Russell's still a very good shooter. You have a really good shooting lineup 1 through 3 with D'Angelo Russell there.
Yeah, and the Warriors need that, because even with Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant a year ago, they were often a team that struggled to get three-pointers just because they really didn't have anyone else beyond those three who could make them at a reliable clip. So it is pretty important for them to be able to replace Durant with another player who can shoot threes at a high volume and at a relatively high percentage. Right. And also a player who can comfortably run a second unit offense, because that has been a killer for the Warriors in recent years. So even though Russell's will obviously start with Klay Thompson out, and when Klay Thompson returns as well, but even with him starting, I think we're going to see his minutes staggered with Steph Curry a lot, so that one of those two is on the court at just about all times. And that's a pretty good guy to be leading your second unit, and the Warriors have had that be a big weakness for them in the past, and that really addresses it, especially, again, when you're pairing him with a role man like Willie Cauley-Stein. That's a pretty dynamic duo that you can start second quarters with.
Yeah, as long as Curry and Russell are both healthy, there should not be 1 minute in any game where both of them are on the bench, because you're completely right. Either one of them can handle running the second unit, whether it's Russell or Curry. Russell with Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be a really nice pick and roll combo for the Warriors. So we'll see what happens with that. Let's move on to the Eastern Conference right now for some of the other big signings. Let's start in Philadelphia with the Jimmy Butler sign and trade to the Heat. We'll talk about that, and then I want to go back to the Sixers, because the Sixers, Celtics, and Heat are kind of all interconnected with this, with Al Horford leaving, going to the Sixers. But let's start with the Heat and Jimmy Butler's decision. Do you think Jimmy Butler made the right decision going to Miami?
You know, I always have a hard time figuring out what a right decision is in free agency, because every player has a different equation than every other player, and a different equation than what I would. It's certainly not necessarily what you expect when a team finishes third in the conference, takes the eventual NBA champions to the buzzer in a game seven, yeah, and then you leave for a team that finished 10th. So if you're just looking at it from a pure basketball standpoint, it's a tiny bit perplexing. But from what we know of Jimmy Butler, I think it makes perfect sense. I think it's a very, very, very Jimmy Butler destination. He gets to be the face of the franchise. He gets to play for a defensive-minded coach who is a little bit old school, with a president in Pat Riley who is extremely old school. He gets to presumably kind of have free reign over some of these younger players and get to be that tough leader that maybe got him run out of town in Chicago and got him kind of run out in Minnesota, but that he is not going to stop being. And he gets to be in Miami, which, you know, he's a guy who pretty much, in his words, doesn't really like to do anything except play basketball and drink wine. So I think Miami is a pretty good fit for him there. So, yeah, I mean, I think this kind of kills any chance of him ever making a super deep playoff run.
Yeah.
But it feels like a fit where he'll be happy, and that's a win.
Yeah, I think it was a puzzling move. You're right that this is kind of on brand with who Jimmy Butler is, and he's someone who Jimmy Butler has so much confidence in himself that even though we as fans pretty much know that he can't lead a team as the number one option, he probably has it in his head that he absolutely can lead this Heat team. My thing with this Heat team right now, they're still trying to figure out a way to get rid of Goran Dragic's contract, and if the Lakers end up not getting Kawhi Leonard, they could make some sense there because Goran Dragic would fit really well with the Lakers and the little current roster that they have. But assuming they do find a trade partner for Goran Dragic, with what they gave up for Jimmy Butler, giving up Josh Richardson and Kelly Olynyk, traded Hassan Whiteside to the Blazers for Myers Leonard, I'd say that the Heat are a better team now than they were June 29th, but I think you could make a legitimate argument that they're not. I think it's that close.
Yeah. They had some depth that they're obviously sacrificing, and Jimmy Butler is obviously a pretty big question mark anytime he goes, just in terms of chemistry and leadership. He can take teams to really high heights sometimes, and he can kind of have some disappointing team results some other times. So, I think they'll be better, certainly, but you're right. I mean, if they come out this year and just don't ever really find their groove, we could be looking at a team that really isn't in any better of a team, and the only difference now is that you're giving a lot of money to a much older player than Josh Richardson was.
And with Jimmy Butler, because I know he's only 29 years old, but he had, 8 years under Tom Thibodeau between the Bulls and the Timberwolves, and Tom Thibodeau, he runs his players hard. Jimmy Butler, I believe, led the league in minutes twice, but even however minutes he was averaging with Tom Thibodeau, let's say it's 38 minutes per game, which is pretty high, but even within those 38 minutes in a Tom Thibodeau-ran team, those 38 minutes, you were just grinding every second you were on the court. It's much harder on your body than 38 minutes in like a Mike D'Antoni-led team, for instance, where everything is a lot more free-flowing. So that's what I'm really worried about, just Jimmy Butler kind of breaking down, kind of like what we saw with Luol Deng. Jimmy Butler's obviously a better player right now signing this contract than Luol Deng was when he signed his 4-year deal with the Lakers. But people forget Deng had a pretty good year the year before, coincidentally with the Heat, before he signed his 4-year deal with the Lakers. So that was my biggest concern with Jimmy Butler going to free agency. And that's why I was kind of hesitant to want the Lakers to go after him, which they ended up not even being able to anyways. Jimmy Butler, I thought he was really going to end up on the Clippers. I thought that would have made a lot of sense. It seemed like he wanted to be in L.A. I actually had a meeting for business for my work, was sitting right next to him at a restaurant in L.A. But a lot of players spend their time in the offseason in L.A., so that's not necessarily foreshadowing anything. But just from different reports that I had seen, it seemed like he really enjoyed L.A., and I thought he was definitely going to come to the Clippers. So surprising, puzzling move for me. We'll see how it works out for them. Let's shift focus to Butler's old team, the Philadelphia 76ers. So like we mentioned, they got Josh Richardson and Kelly Olynyk in return for Jimmy Butler. They also signed Al Horford to a 4-year, $109 million deal. They re-signed Tobias Harris, I believe 5 years, $180 million, if I'm not mistaken. And they lost J.J. Redick, though. So you're looking at a starting lineup next year, most likely, of Ben Simmons, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, and Joel Embiid. And they're also a little bit deeper with the addition of Kelly Olynyk off the bench. They re-signed James Ennis to a 2-year, $4 million deal. Brady, do you think the Sixers are a better team this upcoming year or a worse team than they were last year?
Oh, man, that is an incredibly difficult question. I think a little bit better but I say that with a lot of hesitance. I like the talent that they have now. I like that they are able to get a little bit bigger without necessarily sacrificing spacing, because Al Horford is a pretty decent three-point shooter.
Right.
But it's, to me, they are just an expanded version of what they were last year. And, you know, last year we heard a lot of people make the claim that their starting five on paper, from a pure talent standpoint, was one of, if not the best starting fives in the league. But the question was always, how is it going to fit? Is it actually going to work?
Right.
And to me, that's even bigger this year now. I mean, that starting five that you just mentioned is a really, really, really good starting five. You have an all-star front court of Al Horford and Joel Embiid. You have an incredible defensive backcourt with Ben Simmons and Josh Richardson and now Tobias Harris at the three. And really, Horford and Embiid, very switchable defensive players. Harris can kind of play, and Harris and Simmons can kind of play wherever you want them to play defensively. Josh Richardson is a really strong defensive player who can guard multiple positions. But this is really a defense that can switch absolutely anything. And then offensively, you have four guys who can shoot the ball decently. And then obviously Ben Simmons.
Yeah, their point guard who cannot shoot, the only one who can't shoot.
Has not made a three-pointer in his career. No. but even with Embiid and Horford being able to make threes at a decent clip for their positions, they're still big men who aren't particularly mobile.
Right.
They're still kind of lumbering when they get out there. Tobias Harris, even though he can shoot well, he often is comfortable playing a little bit closer to the hoop. So the spacing, the fit has the potential, I think, to be good. But man, it's going to take a lot of work from Brett Brown, a fair amount of sacrifice from a lot of the players to make it work. But I like it for this year. There are some perplexing parts about it. $180 million is a ton of cheddar for Tobias Harris.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Jimmy Butler, you know, losing him, and there were reports that they weren't willing to offer him the max. And, you know, they had a good one-year run at him. But ultimately, if you take it back to a year ago, they traded Dario Saric and Robert Covington for Josh Richardson and Kelly Olynyk.
Good way to put it.
I don't think that's necessarily something that they look back on now and think, oh, that's great. That was an upgrade. I think they'd be pretty happy now to have Robert Covington and Dario Saric.
Yeah.
So we'll see. They're an odd team with kind of odd timelines when you consider the money owed to Harris, the age of Horford, but then how young Embiid and Simmons are. And of course, Simmons just signed his max extension today or yesterday. So they got a lot of money tied up in a lot of talented players, and it's just going to be a puzzle to see if they can make it work.
Yeah, I think for next year and going into the future that the Sixers, they're still one of the, if not the title favorites, depending on what happens with Kawhi Leonard, or Eastern Conference favorites, but I'd argue that they got a little bit worse. The only player that really benefits from all of their moves, in my opinion, would be Tobias Harris, just because with Jimmy Butler gone, Tobias Harris can now, I think he can just go back to a role more similar to what he had with the Clippers, where he is now their best perimeter player in terms of being able to get his own shot. Josh Richardson is a fine player. He's a good player. Ben Simmons, as great as he is, cannot get a shot for himself, at least not from the outside. Tobias Harris, yeah, he's going to be an uptick in his scoring. With Al Horford and Joel Embiid sharing the 4-5 position, it has the potential to be good defensively and offensively. I'm just worried about, like you said, Embiid and Al Horford, neither one of them are very mobile. What happens when you go up against a team that has a stretch four and a mobile stretch four? Al Horford's a great defender, but he's not someone that you want sticking with a stretch four who can move around. And when you have him and Joel Embiid on the court at the same time, Embiid's a great defender too, but he's a great post defender, a great rim protector. He is not someone that you want chasing someone around. He's 7 foot two, 285 pounds. You don't want someone that huge having to run around and chase someone. He's not going to have to because Al Horford is going to be doing it. Horford's 6'10", 245, a little more mobile. But my questions with them is just how is that going to work when they go against a team that has a stretch four? Offensively, Al Horford's a good three-point shooter for a big man. Joel Embiid, he takes a lot of threes for a big man, but I'd say he's average. And
definitely.
So just when Embiid is sitting out at the three-point line like he likes to do sometimes and just waiting for the ball, defense is going to be able to collapse. And Al Horford, who is a good post player as well, he's not going to be able to operate as well because the defense is going to be able to collapse on them. Ben Simmons, you can cheat fully off of him as long as he's outside. Josh Richardson, yeah, he can hit the outside shot, but J.J. Redick was obviously a much better shooter, and the chemistry between Joel Embiid and J.J. Redick, and Ben Simmons and J.J. Redick, just being able to get him really good looks coming off of screens, whether they went inside to Embiid or Ben Simmons pushing in transition and then knowing exactly where J.J. Redick was going to be, that's going to be missed, and it's going to be missed pretty badly. Josh Richardson can run the floor, but when you're backpedaling on defense and Ben Simmons is coming at you, you are backpedaling to the basket, not outside of the three-point line. So it's going to be a little bit harder for the Sixers to get some really easy baskets in transition this upcoming year. Obviously, Josh Richardson is a better athlete than J.J. Redick, so he'll be able to finish better. But again, that goes back to Al Horford's not going to be able to run the floor the same way as when you had, instead of Tobias Harris and Al Horford at the three and the four, when you had Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris at the three and the four, that fit with what Ben Simmons likes to do, which is push the ball. So it's going to be interesting to see how they incorporate everything. I would still argue that even though they did get a little bit worse, they're still probably the favorites in the East, depending on what Kawhi Leonard does. But we'll get to that after we talk about all the free agency stuff. I want to talk about who's the favorite in each conference right now. But let's go to the Celtics. So Kyrie Irving obviously left, went to the Brooklyn Nets. Al Horford decided to go to the Philadelphia 76ers, even with the Boston Celtics doing some cap maneuvering to where they could afford Al Horford and still get Kemba Walker. Al Horford said no thank you. So the Celtics got Kemba Walker on a four-year, $141, $142 million max deal. Ended up being a three-team trade with Terry Rozier going to the Charlotte Hornets on a three-year, $58 million deal, Kemba coming to the Celtics, and Kyrie Irving going to the Brooklyn Nets. What do you think about the Celtics? How do you think they're going to fare next year, adding Kemba and losing Kyrie and Al Horford?
Well, they're definitely going to take a sizable step back. I think the loss of Horford hurts them more.
Yeah, I agree.
Than the loss of Kyrie.
I agree.
Not just because, I mean, obviously replacing Kyrie with Kemba really minimalizes
Would you have thought, let's say they didn't get Kemba Walker and they just lost Kyrie and Al Horford, would Kyrie have been the bigger loss? I know he's a better player, but just given all of the off-court issues between him and the team.
I don't think he would have been a bigger loss, partially because of those issues that you mentioned, and partially because I feel like in Brad Stevens' systems, Kyrie was a little bit more replaceable.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Right? Like, the team did well when he was off, and, you know, that isn't an indictment of Kyrie, but the system, that ball movement heavy offense and strong defense, those are a little bit antithetical to the way Kyrie plays, and obviously having that star helps, and having that isolation star is huge in the playoffs, as we've seen multiple times with Kyrie. But ultimately, this is a team that was able to get by with Terry Rozier running the point. This is a team that was able to get by with Marcus Smart running the point. Now you take out a center who can pass and play really good defense. That, to me, it gets more to the root of what Brad Stevens' teams need.
Yep.
So that loss is huge, and I wonder if there will be any ripple effects with, you know, with Horford deciding he didn't want to return to the team. And it kind of seemed like once he decided that, he decided it. It wasn't a matter of money or being convinced. He decided he was ready to move on. Obviously, they rebound well by getting Kemba, but you wonder if when player like Kyrie and a player like Horford, who is pretty universally loved and respected, both decide that they don't want to be a part of this team anymore, if that has a ripple effect with other free agents down the line, other teams and players thinking that, oh, something's going on in Boston, maybe this isn't a great situation.
Yeah, and actually to that point with the Celtics, so the Celtics, we've been hearing for all these past few years about how many assets they have and how many great young players they have and how they've set themselves up so well. And it did look like that was the case, but their assets that they thought were so great, especially the Kings pick, which ended up being the number 14 overall pick, the players that they have too. I mean, Jaylen Brown had a down year this year. Jason Tatum had a down year this year. Terry Rozier, they don't even have him anymore. But their treatment of players as a whole, I think, largely contributed to why Kyrie wasn't happy and Al Horford wasn't happy. Al Horford saw the Celtics trade away Isaiah Thomas after convincing him to play through a hip injury and telling him, yeah, you can't make it any worse, just go out and play, right after his sister died, trying to force him to keep playing. They saw how the Boston Celtics back in, when was it, after the 2012 season, traded away Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, who were two beloved figures for the team, and Paul Pierce, one of the all-time great Celtics ever. And I know it was a great trade being able to get all those draft picks back, but you take that versus a team like the Lakers, who, look, at the time, them giving Kobe Bryant a two-year, $48.5 million contract coming off of a ruptured Achilles before he even plays one game, I thought it was an awful move, and I still don't think it was the right move, but it shows a difference in terms of seeing players just as assets versus seeing players as actual human beings. I think that's something that when the Lakers go to sell Kawhi Leonard on joining the franchise, as much of a bad contract as that was giving Kobe that 2 years, $48.5 million, it does show that they take care of their own players and that they're not just looking to kind of milk every last bit of good years out of a player, and then when they start to decline, just get rid of them. The Celtics and Danny Ainge, it's just something that going forward, if they continue to utilize their players just as assets and not anything beyond that, I mean, we saw what happened with Al Horford, and I think it's more having to do with Al Horford than Kyrie Irving. Al Horford, when he opted out of his contract, I thought, okay, he's going to end up re-signing. And there were talks that he was going to sign a four-year deal with them. And or a three-year deal. And then, like an hour or two later, he decided, nope, you know what, never mind, I'm not going to do that. So it was a puzzling decision by him, and who knows what happened behind closed doors. But now he went from being the heart and soul of the Celtics defense and their playmaking five to being a playmaking four on the 76ers, where he's a little bit out of position. And the Celtics, look, the Kemba Walker contract, I think that in year two, year three of the contract, the Celtics are going to be regretting giving him that big of a contract, just because Kemba Walker is already 29 years old. He's a 6 foot tall point guard. Usually when point guards are that small and they get to the wrong side of 30, it's not a pretty sight to see. They start to decline. They just, injuries happen, just because at that size, it's so hard to continue. What Kemba Walker does, he's a decent shooter, but his quickness more than his speed, but just his first step, his quickness off the dribble, being able to get to the basket and blow by people, that's something that's not going to stay with him going into his 30s. And I think that, yeah, by year three for sure, the Celtics will be regretting giving Kemba this huge contract.
Yeah, you know, that contract is kind of a little bit of a win now contract,
yeah,
for a team that, you know, maybe would have been considered a win-now team had they retained Al Horford, but they didn't. And it's not a win-now team anymore in my eyes. It's going to require some pretty impressive and creative moves by Danny Ainge to become a team that is contending next year. So yeah, I think it's a I think it's a decent sized contract for Kemba, but it has to be for the right team. And I don't think right now the Celtics are that right team. And I think for Kemba to make the back of that contract look decent, he needs to kind of take a little bit of a page out of Kyle Lowry's book. He needs to become a little bit lower usage, a little bit more selective with where he's shooting, a little bit less of an aggressive player and more of a facilitator, spot up shooter, focus on defense and things like that. And I'm not sure that Kemba will do that. And I'm not sure that the Celtics have the pieces in place to even utilize that.
Yeah.
If he were to make that transition.
Yeah. I don't think Kemba Walker has the capability to do that. Anyways, as a shooter, if you want a point guard who's a spot up shooter, well, you just had a much better spot up shooter in Kyrie Irving, who you lost. You got Kemba Walker back. Kemba Walker is as good as he is because of the way that he plays. And like we both said, going into his 30s, like, he's not going to be able to continue to do that. You mentioned defensively, as quick as Kemba Walker is, him only being 6 feet tall, it's tough to be a good defender. Isaiah Thomas is 5'9", and he's another really quick point guard, but it doesn't matter how much Isaiah Thomas wants to focus on defense, he will never be a good defender just because he is 5'9". Kemba Walker, 6 feet, 3 inches taller, which makes a big difference, but still, that's a small point guard, and it's going to be tough for the Celtics going forward. And you're right, with Al Horford gone, like, they're not in win-now mode, and they still have assets available. If Danny Ainge, I'm not going to take anything away from Danny Ainge. He is a really good general manager, and I'm sure he can figure out some moves to do to improve the team in the short term, but long term, it's crazy because of what we all thought of the Celtics just a year ago, but they just look like there's so many more question marks surrounding the Celtics now than there was at the beginning of this year, for sure. Let's move on to two other Eastern Conference teams, the Indiana Pacers and the Milwaukee Bucks. So the Milwaukee Bucks lost Malcolm Brogdon. He ended up going to the Indiana Pacers on, I believe it was a 4-year, $85 million deal. They were able to re-sign Chris Middleton to a max contract. They signed Brook Lopez to a 4-year, $52 million deal. They signed Brook Lopez's twin brother, Robin Lopez, as well. Pacers, while they did acquire Malcolm Brogdon, they lost Bojan Bogdanović. They lost Darren Collison. They lost Thaddeus Young. Let's start with the Bucks first. Do you still think that they could finish as the number one seed in the East next year without Malcolm Brogdon?
I do. I do think they can. They have a good fit, in my opinion. Losing Brogdon is certainly a big hit, but ultimately they still have a really strong starting five. I don't know who will slide into Brogdon's spot, perhaps George Hill. But then you still have...
Could be Wesley Matthews, too, which was a really good signing.
Yeah, I forgot about that signing. That's a really good one. So, yeah, I would assume then George Hill will run the second unit. So I would assume that starting lineup then is Eric Bledsoe, Wesley Matthews, Chris Middleton, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brook Lopez. That is a really good starting five. So I think they absolutely can win in the regular season, at least. Depending on where Kawhi goes, Giannis is, I think, comfortably the best player in the Eastern Conference if Kawhi goes to L.A., and assuming that, well, obviously Durant isn't going to be playing next year, and doubtful that he'll ever be what we're used to seeing from him. So you're still dealing with the conference's star elite player with a bunch of players who are good and fit around him, kind of fringe all-star level guys. But I still think that Toronto showed something last year in the playoffs when they won those four consecutive games against Milwaukee. I think they exposed some holes and some weaknesses. I think, you know, as of right now, I would not put Milwaukee as the favorite to emerge from the East and make it to the NBA Finals, but I do think that they are the favorites to have the best record in the East.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think the Bucks, again, next year, they're going to be trying to get the best record, and they'll probably end up getting it. Losing Malcolm Brogdon, I'm not as high on Malcolm Brogdon as other people are. I think Malcolm Brogdon's a really good player, but he's also, he's as good as he's going to get. He's 27 years old, I believe. He played, 4 years at Virginia, so he's a really good player, but the ceiling on him is, if it's any higher than it is right now, it's not much. And he's someone who, he can hit threes, he can defend, he hits free throws, but I don't think he's even worth as much money as the Pacers are giving him, a little over $20 million per year. So I think that's something that, while you can't completely replace his production, you can find different players to do parts of what he could do. And I think that's going to be good enough to where the Bucks aren't going to miss him terribly. They re-signed Chris Middleton, who was clearly their second-best player. Re-signed Brooke Lopez, who was, aside from Giannis and Chris Middleton, their most impactful player. Brooke Lopez, just his ability to spread the floor and let Giannis kind of operate inside, was a seamless fit for them, and then he can still protect the rim. Yeah, the Bucks, I think, again, are going to finish with the best record. That's whether Kawhi signs with the Raptors or he doesn't, because we've seen this before. Kawhi is not interested in the regular season, and for good reason, as we saw last year. But I agree also that in terms of the playoffs, if Kawhi does not go back to the Raptors, I think the Sixers are the favorites, and then I'd probably... Yeah, I'd say the Bucks are second, but yeah, I think whether they had ended up re-signing Brogdon or not, that wouldn't have changed me thinking that they'd be the second best team in the East. As for the Pacers, though, look, they lost a lot with Bogdanovich and Thaddeus Young and Darren Collison. Darren Collison retiring at age 31, I think, was by far the most surprising thing that's happened so far in the offseason. He was there were reports that he was going to get $10 to $12 million from the Bulls, and he just decided at 31 that he was going to step away from the game to practice his faith, which, look, that's great if he wanted to end up doing that. I'm not saying it was the wrong decision to do. Everyone makes their own decisions and for their own reasons, but just really surprising. And Darren Collison was someone who was a really good player last year. 2 years ago, he led the league in three-point percentage. He's someone who still, even at age 31, one of the faster players in the league. And he would have been a good option for the Bulls, or if any other team had come in and tried to snatch him. It would have been a good option, but they lose him. They gain Malcolm Brogdon. They do gain Victor Oladipo back after his knee injury from last year. The Pacers, to me, I have them behind the Bucks, the Sixers, the Raptors if Kawhi comes back, and then it's neck and neck between them and the Celtics. And then the Nets, too. You need to factor them into it. I'd put the Nets ahead of the Pacers, actually. So the Pacers are, what, fifth or sixth best in the East, at least according to me? What do you think? Do you think I'm on point with that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the Nets will be better. I think the Celtics will be a little bit better. And I think there's even a pretty decent chance, honestly, that the Raptors will be better, even without Kawhi. That would be an interesting team to watch, but that's a topic for another day. But yeah, I just think, I mean, there are a few different problems that Indy is facing here. First, they were a great defensive team last year. Now they lose Thaddeus Young, who, incredibly underrated defensive player. He's a very, very good defender. I have a lot of questions about Victor Oladipo. When is he fully going to be healthy? How long is it going to take him to be comfortable, to feel like himself? Those types of injuries can take a really long time for a player to fully recover from. Sometimes players need a whole season of actually playing on those lower body injuries before they actually have the full comfort to play like themselves. So I think he'll still be good, but I have questions about just how good he'll be. He was already regressing a little bit last year relative to his first All-Star season. So they have a lot of question marks. And then on top of that, you have, you know, if you assume that, I mean, obviously Oladipo is their best player. Brogdon is one of their better players. And then kind of rounding out their top player list is Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis. And those are two players that at this point haven't been able to play together. So maybe that changes, you know, Thaddeus Young leaving, Indy letting him go. Maybe they are optimistic that they can run out a two big lineup of Sabonis and Turner and have it work. But to this point, Nate McMillan has kind of refused to play with those two guys on the floor. And those are two of their four best players, in my opinion. And so when you're basically saying that one of your top four players has to be off the court at all times, that's limiting how good you can be as a team, because neither of those guys can be playing starter minutes because they need to be accommodating each other. So Nate McMillan is a very good coach. We'll see what he does, but I'm buying a whole lot of regression from Indy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I want to get to one more team before we talk about who we think. I want to get to a fun question, but I'll get to it in a minute. So the Utah Jazz, they traded for Mike Conley, signed Bojan Bogdanović in the offseason. There are some people that think that the Utah Jazz are championship contenders. Do you think they elevated that much in those two moves?
No, I don't think so, but that comes with the caveat that maybe that could change at some point. You know, Donovan Mitchell obviously has star potential, and I think there's a lot that he hasn't quite tapped into. Rudy Gobert continues to get better. Maybe he is able to add a little bit more of an offensive game. So I don't think to start the season that they are championship material, though the West is certainly wide open. But I do think that this is a team with a pretty high ceiling, because we could see that third year leap from Donovan Mitchell that we see from so many other players. But I think they're just a little bit on the outside looking in right now. But they're a team that, you know, the last 2 years has been elite if you look at the metrics, if you just go by net rating. And that hasn't played out in the playoffs, in part because their offense has lacked spacing and has been so easy to exploit once the postseason comes around. So adding Bogdanović and trading, not straight up trading, but, you know, essentially trading Rubio for Conley, Now you have a team with a lot more spacing, a lot better shooting, and has the potential to minimize those weaknesses that have been exploited. So I still put them a little bit on the outside looking in the West, but I think they are close enough that certain developments could put them into that top tier.
Okay, so I'm not as high on the Jazz as you. I think they're obviously a playoff contender, and they're probably in the 4-5 range in the West, which is good. But I just think with Donovan Mitchell as your best player, we saw him in the playoffs last year, and again, he could have a nice jump going into his third year, but whenever you have your best player at 6'3", you just look at the past champions, with the exception of the Warriors with Stephen Curry, who in 2015 was the Warriors' best player, but their other 2 years winning it, Kevin Durant was clearly their best player. What team has ever won a championship with their best player being 6'3" or shorter? It's just, it's so difficult to do because, and also, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, as good as he is, he's nowhere close to as good as Stephen Curry is or was in 2015. It's just so hard to rely on someone that small to be your best player, because as good as a player at 6'3" can be, you put a really good wing defender onto that 6'3" player, someone who's 6'7", 6'8", rangy and athletic, it just makes it so much more difficult for them. And Donovan Mitchell's a really good athlete, but again, at 6'3", he's really limited in, not really limited, but he's going to be more limited going up against a 6'7", 6'8", good wing defender versus someone who is also 6'7", 6'8". And it's just, it's a challenge for them. Obviously, Mike Conley coming in over Ricky Rubio, yeah, that makes them a lot better. Mike Conley's still an excellent defender. He can hit the 3-2, so he's going to open up their offense a little bit more. Rudy Gobert as your center. Defensively, look, the Jazz are still going to be one of, if not the best team in the league defensively, but offensively, Rudy Gobert doesn't give you too much offensively. Great defensively, but offensively not too much. Bojan Bogdanović is going to open up the floor a little bit more, let Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley be able to operate and drive, but I just don't see the Jazz as legitimate contenders for an NBA title, regardless of where Kawhi Leonard goes. They're not going to beat the Sixers in a finals matchup if they get that far. They're not going to beat the Bucks. You look in the Western Conference, they're not beating the Warriors, assuming Klay Thompson comes back healthy this year. They're not beating that team with D'Angelo Russell in place of Kevin Durant. They're probably not beating the Rockets. I'd choose the Trailblazers over them too. Obviously, if Kawhi Leonard goes to the Lakers, you're choosing them over the Jazz. But even if Kawhi Leonard doesn't go to the Lakers, depending on how they fill out the rest of the roster, you maybe choose the Lakers over them too. I don't see it. I think they made some really good moves, and for a team in as small of a market as the Jazz are, they're kind of capped in what they can do. Obviously, even if they had the cap room to go after a Kawhi Leonard, he's not coming to Salt Lake City. So great moves by the Utah Jazz, but it's just not enough, in my opinion, to where they can be legitimate NBA contenders or NBA championship contenders. So let's move on to, look, the Kawhi Leonard domino, whenever it finally falls, we're going to get a lot more clarity on who the favorite in the NBA is going to be. But with the Kawhi Leonard stuff up in the air, if you had to place a bet on one team to win the championship this next year, and you had to put all your life savings on it, this is something that the NBA, the Jump, had asked about a week ago before the free agency started, but I still think it's a fun question. Who would you bet on? Do you want me to go first, give you a little bit of time to think about it?
No, I think I can answer this one.
Okay.
If I had to put all my, well, it's not a lot of money, but if I had to put all my money on it, I would go with the Lakers, honestly.
Really?
I know that might be a surprising pick, but they're obviously one of the three teams in the running for Kawhi. I think if Kawhi signs there, they are comfortably the favorites. They're going to have a hard time building depth, obviously, but when you have arguably three of the five best players in the world, two of those three being elite, both offensively and defensively, I just think that you have to be considered the favorite. So they have that chance to be, in my eyes, the clear favorite. And even if they don't get Kawhi, I think they'll be able to fill out their roster with some interesting pieces because people like Los Angeles and people want to play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And you're still dealing with two truly elite players who on paper are an incredibly good match. They should work really well together. I know that at some point we should expect LeBron James to decline, but until I see it, he is still the best player in the world when the games matter. I need to see a playoff run where he isn't elevating his team to heights that seem unrealistic before I'm ready to truly say that his decline is here. He's just not a guy that I'm particularly comfortable betting against in the playoffs. And with Anthony Davis around, you're surely getting him to the playoffs. So I would be surprised if they won the championship without getting Kawhi Leonard. But that's a hell of a place to start. LeBron James and Anthony Davis, that's going to compete with anyone in the playoffs. So it has a chance. And then they have the chance to get Kawhi Leonard as well. So
right.
There's no other clear favorite to me.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with my original answer, but you make a pretty compelling case for the Lakers. I'd go with the Warriors as is right now, just not knowing where Kawhi Leonard's going to go, just because obviously the Warriors aren't as good as they were last year. If the Warriors were completely healthy last year, we can both agree they win that series. The Raptors do not win the championship. Swapping out Kevin Durant for D'Angelo Russell, yes, there's a question of fit, especially the defense in the backcourt like we talked about, but they still have Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. They have another really good player, all-star last year in D'Angelo Russell. They have one of the better coaches in the NBA in Steve Kerr, and they have one of, if not the best, general manager in the NBA in Bob Myers as well. I just think I'm playing it a little bit more safe with going with the Warriors because everything you talked about with the Lakers is absolutely true. Even if they don't get Kawhi Leonard, I had told myself after the 2015 NBA Finals, I think it was, when the Warriors did beat the Cavs, but that was without Kyrie Irving and without Kevin Love, who were out with the injury, and LeBron just had an unbelievable finals series. I said that I would never bet against LeBron James again. And you're right. The people who talk about LeBron James had a down year last year and we saw him start to decline. No, he didn't. He was 33 years old. He turned 34. He strained his groin. He was out for, 15, 17 games. He still averaged 27, 8, and 8. When he came back from his groin injury, you could tell his lateral quickness was not there, but as the season started to move on, it started to come back slowly, but it did start to come back, and I fully expect that when next season rolls around, whether Kawhi Leonard is on the Lakers or isn't, LeBron James is going to be completely healthy, knock on wood, and yeah, the Lakers are going to be a really good team regardless, and you're right, the fit between LeBron and Anthony Davis is seamless. The fit, actually, with Kawhi Leonard on the team, from a fit standpoint, isn't seamless. But obviously, if you can get someone like Kawhi Leonard on your team, you do it, and then you worry about fit afterwards. LeBron James, in that case, would play a lot more kind of like a true point guard, just distributing a lot more. He'd still score over 20 points a game. But I think he could definitely do that role as well. The point you made about the depth, their lack of depth if they get Kawhi Leonard. At this point, with all the free agents that have signed, they're not going to have much depth regardless of if they get Kawhi Leonard or not. So they have to really be hoping that they get Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, I mean, there's still Danny Green, which I think that if Kawhi Leonard goes back to the Raptors, I know a lot of people think Danny Green is waiting because if Kawhi goes back, then Danny Green's going to go back to the Raptors. If Kawhi goes back to the Raptors or goes to the Clippers, the Lakers are going to give Danny Green a really good contract just because there is no one else to give that money to that makes a lot of sense. And from a depth perspective, so let's say the Lakers get Kawhi Leonard. So they have Kawhi, LeBron, Anthony Davis. They have Kyle Kuzma too, who as a fourth option, I'm not as high on Kuzma as especially Perry's really high on Kyle Kuzma. I think he gets too much credit. He's not as good of an offensive player as people want to say he is just because he shoots a lot, and then he's a little inefficient, not a good playmaker for others, doesn't really play much defense, but he did become a better defender last year than he was in year one, so he definitely has a really good work ethic. But depth, I just think it matters a lot more in the regular season than it does in the postseason. When it gets to the playoffs, it's who has the best player in the series. And 90% of the time, whichever team has the best player in a playoff series, regardless of which team has the better depth, the team with the better player is going to win the series. And if you have Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis on the same team, you have most likely the three best players in any playoff series. People are going to say three of the top seven players in the NBA. You could make the argument three of the top five players in the NBA. Depth does not matter as much in the playoffs because you no longer have the back-to-back games. You don't have three games in five nights. You play the playoff game. It's going to be a tough, hard-fought game, but then you have at the very least one full day off to recover. And the load management stuff that Kawhi Leonard was doing last year, even though he was banged up, it obviously helped when he got to the playoffs. That's why a team like the Denver Nuggets, if I had to say who's going to have the best record in the West next year, I'd say the Denver Nuggets. They're a really deep team, and they're a perfect regular season team. Once they get to the playoffs, as good as Nikola Jokic is, I don't think that Nikola Jokic is the type of number one player that you can have where he can actually lead you to a championship. And Jamal Murray, as good as he is, I do not think that he is a number two option on the championship-level team. They have a lot of depth, but once you get to the playoffs and you're going up against, in the regular season, you might catch the Lakers, for instance, if they get Kawhi. You might catch them on a night where they are let's say LeBron's resting. So now they have Kawhi and AD, and they have Kuzma, and they don't have much depth. They're not going to play AD and Kawhi 40 minutes to try to win that game. They're going to play 34, 36 minutes at most, and if they lose that game, okay, they're going to win enough games to where maybe they're not the number one seed, but they're the three seed or the four seed. As soon as the playoffs start, you match up against them, that's great, you have all that depth, but you're going up against Kawhi, LeBron, and AD for probably at least 38 minutes a night. So I don't care how much depth you have, you're not going to be able to overcome that much talent on the court for that long of a time each game.
Yeah. Completely agree.
Yeah. So All right, before we get out of here, I was trying to delay the Kawhi Leonard conversation as long as I could, just seeing if maybe something was going to break so we could talk about it. But before we get out of here, Brady, what's your prediction? Where's Kawhi Leonard end up? Raptors, Clippers, Lakers?
Oof, man, this is one where all three options feel so likely to me.
Who do you
really
think?
Nothing would surprise me.
Who do you think has the best pitch to him?
I think the Clippers have the best pitch to him. You get to be a contender, you get to still be the face of the franchise, and you get to come back home to Southern California. To me, that ticks all boxes. It's a well-run organization. It's a well-coached organization. It's a location we know he likes. It's an instant contender with him on it, but him still being the man in a way that he wouldn't be if he went to the Lakers. To me, that checks all the boxes, unless you really care about the winning and the legacy, in which case, how can anyone check more boxes than the team that you just won a championship with? That's a pretty big box to check. So I think they all have a lot of to offer them, because obviously the Lakers, that gives you a chance to form a dynasty, that gives you a chance to be part of something really special, historically special, gives you the best shot at being a champion on three different organizations. It's hard to compete with that. That said, if I had to bet, I'm going to go with the Raptors.
Okay. I think all three of the teams, they make sense in different ways. It's so tough to predict with Kawhi Leonard, just because there has never been a free agent, at least in recent memory, where we have known less about what they really care about and what they desire, just because Kawhi Leonard does not talk. And credit to him and his camp, because that's who he is, and they've done a great job of not letting anything leak out. There was a report today by Mark Stein talking about how sources that he has from the Clippers and the Lakers weren't really telling him anything, because they got the sense that Kawhi Leonard's camp just wanted everything to be really quiet, and the Lakers and Clippers didn't want to do anything to upset his camp and make them not be able to trust them. The trust that's built between the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard, it's been built over the last year. So if he values trust above all else, then yes, the Raptors are clearly the one that make the most sense, because he's seen them for the last year, what they've been able to do. Kawhi Leonard said after the finals were over that, yeah, he's been dealing with some injuries, but we didn't really know about it because nothing leaked from the Raptors, and that's a credit to their organization. Masai Ujiri, I mentioned Bob Myers as arguably the best general manager in the NBA. I think Masai Ujiri might be technically the president of the Toronto Raptors, but he is, for all intents and purposes, the general manager for the Raptors. He's the only one that could give Bob Myers a run for his money. He's an exceptional GM. If it just all depends on what Kawhi Leonard cares about. If he cares about trust, you pick the Raptors. If he cares about front office, the Clippers and the Raptors both have a great front office, and you really can't go wrong with either one of them. The Lakers, the last month or so, their front office looks like it somewhat knows what it's doing, but they were in complete disarray for the first part of this offseason. The entire regular season, you got that report about what was happening behind the scenes. If he's looking at front office, no, the Lakers are not the team that he wants to go to. If he cares about his health, you could make a case for all three. I'd argue that if he cares about load management and being able to kind of pace himself during the regular season, that the Lakers actually make the most sense, just because you can have Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis all, if you really want to, take 15, 20 games off each during the regular season and kind of alternate to where two of the three are playing. That's not the best case for team building, but a team with two of the three of them on any given night and Kyle Kuzma, and then even if it's all just a bunch of vet minimums around them, that's still a really good team, and that's a team that's going to make the playoffs, be a 4 or 5 seed at the very least, and then when the playoffs come around, you don't have to deal with load management, be able to make some real noise. So it's a toss-up. And then with the Lakers, obviously, if he cares about winning, I don't see how you could make an argument for any team besides the Lakers. You go to the Lakers, you have the best big three, most talented big three ever assembled. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and I don't think it's really even close. I think the argument, not even with the Heat, but the Lakers with Magic Johnson, James Worthy, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but that three was not nearly as good as this big three would be from a talent perspective. We'll see how they all mesh together if it happens. But yeah, it just really depends on what he really values. If I had to guess right now, I don't want to jinx anything, so I'm not going to say where I think he's going to end up, but I am a Lakers fan, so by me not saying anything, read between the lines. I don't know. I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible, but regardless, there's always going to be a little bit of bias put into it. But look, I'm a Lakers fan. I'm not saying anything. Knock on wood, what is in my head ends up happening. I'm going to leave it at that. So, all right, Brady, thank you so much for joining me for this podcast. I really enjoyed being able to pick your brain and talk some basketball with you. It's been crazy, just all the moves that's gone on in free agency. There's so many more moves that we haven't gotten to either, but save that for another podcast. Brady, thank you so much for your time. Everyone listening, thank you all so much for your time listening to us talk. Hope you guys enjoyed. This is episode 55 of NBA Unwrapped. Remember that you can follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped. Perry, even though he's not here, follow him on Twitter at Perry Aston. Christian, even though he's not here too, follow him on Twitter at McGowan75. Brady, you can follow on Twitter at Brady Klopfer NBA. Make sure to follow our Unwrapped Sports Network page at Unwrapped Sports. Go ahead and check out our website at unwrappedsports.com. A lot of really good content on there. If you haven't checked it out, please go ahead and do. Give us some 5-star reviews if you're listening on the Apple iTunes podcast app. And yeah, other than that, just hope you guys enjoy. And I hope that regardless if Kawhi Leonard chooses the Lakers or not, I really hope that we get end to all of this soon. Today was an exhausting day. Yeah, I don't know about you, Brady. I told you before we started the podcast, I was refreshing my Twitter feed. I don't know how many times, more times than I'd like to say, more times than I'm proud of, but it's crazy. It's only July 2nd because Kevin Durant, when he chose the Warriors, it was July 4th before he made a decision. LeBron James, when he went to the Heat and had the decision, that was on July 8th. When he went back to the Cavaliers, it was July 11th, but I think a lot of it is just because every other marquee free agent made a decision pretty much right away, if not before the legal time to make a decision was made. It just seems like it's been taking so long.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, all the big dominoes other than Kawhi started to fall on Sunday, if not before. And,
yeah,
you know, we had Kyrie, we had Durant, we had Kemba, we had at least the framework for Butler. All these things fell, and as they fell, all of the mid-tier moves fell, and as the mid-tier moves fell, all of the lower moves fell, and really all the moves went in those first 24 hours with the exception of Kawhi, but it felt like a lot longer. It's felt way more than 2 days. Just with the sheer number and the amount of exhaustion that follows, because normally these things drag out enough that with each move you kind of get a feel for how it changes each team and impacts the league, and we didn't get that this time because they're just all happening, and before you can digest it, another one's happening, and we haven't really had the time to fully digest what has been going on here.
Yeah, it's just Kawhi, please make a decision soon, but not
before Vegas.
Yeah, but not too soon. Please let me get this podcast out. We'll see. If he makes a decision before I get this podcast out, then we can either laugh about how wrong we were or say, hey, you know what? We actually knew what we were talking about. So we'll see what goes on. Thank you guys again so much. Brady, thank you. And tune in next time, and I'm sure we're going to have another really exciting episode. Oh, the next podcast will probably be from Las Vegas. Perry, Christian, and I are going to be in Las Vegas for Summer League. Brady, are you going to Summer League at all?
Yes, I will be there Saturday to Thursday.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so you know what? We'll be in Vegas with Brady. Maybe we'll be able to get him on another podcast. We'll see. So thank you guys so much for tuning in, and make sure to tune in to our Summer League podcast as well.